You are listening to Dauber Prospects Radio, Episode 4, What Rookies Are Making Some Noise in the NHL. We pick three prospects who have made their teams out of camp and choose who, if he stays or goes. And we have an interview with Shane Malloy, co-host of Hockey Prospect Radio on SiriusXM Radio and TSN Radio Network. So let's get started. Hey everybody, Paul Zwombeck here. Welcome to Episode 4 of Dauber Prospects Radio, the best and only fantasy hockey program dedicated to hockey prospects. You can follow us on Twitter at @DPR_show or email us at prospectradio@dauberprospects.com. Now let's get into the show. Peter, how's it going?
Amazing, amazing, amazing. Hockey's back, buddy.
Yeah,
all levels.
Finally.
Real games, game on.
Yeah.
Fantasy hockey box scores. Life is good.
Yeah.
How about
so,
you?
I've moved, and so I haven't really been getting any cable or anything, but it's finally set up. I can't wait. I PVR'd the Penguins game tonight. We're recording on a Monday. I'm going to watch the Penguins game right after we're done recording, so I'm pretty pumped for that.
Most important question, did you win your first week of the Dauber Prospects Fantasy Hockey League?
I did.
Me too. It was a slaughter, actually. It wasn't even close.
Yeah, we're in the same division, and we're the only teams 1-0 right now, so bring it on, Peter.
I can't wait to go head-to-head against you.
You might regret saying that.
We will see. not as bad as the Mikko Rantanen and Nick Ritchie question, but maybe. We'll see.
All right, let's get into segment one. Rookies in the NHL. Who's standing out to you after this first week?
All right, well, I got a long list of rookies that have made the team across the NHL. I haven't seen all these players play live, but there's a number of prominent prospects. And obviously, there's guys like, you know, that Austin Matthews fellow, he had a good start. But I think everybody is well-informed on that already. So let's not talk about Austin Matthews. But in Toronto, there's a number of other prospects and rookies that have made the team. In particular, on Austin Matthews' line, it's an all-rookie line with William Nylander and Zach Hyman. If that line stays together and they can ride the gravy train of Austin Matthews for the better part of the season, they have the opportunity to become fantasy relevant. William Nylander is already a top prospect and fantasy relevant, but you know it's not going to hurt playing with Austin Matthews and having a guy cash in your saucer passes like he did the other night. William Nylander's a +3. He's already got 2 points in two games. There's a lot to like about William Nylander, especially if he rides shotgun with Matthews. And then the other guy on that line, Zach Hyman, he's not as famous a prospect as his line mates, but he is definitely endeared by coach Mike Babcock. Just loves the guy. He's a little bit older of the two. I believe he's 21 or 22 years old. He played college, played in the AHL last year, worked his way up, got some NHL games at the end of the season. He's got 1 point so far, 2 shots on goal and a +4, but he's going to do the heavy lifting on that line. So if you've got a roto league where you count a variety of stats like hits and blocks, Hyman's going to get his fair share of those. And if he can prove to be a pugilist as well, that'll increase his chances of staying on that line. And he'll rack you up some pins as well if you score those. And then two other prospects that have shown really well are Connor Brown. You might as well just rename this guy Charlie Hustle because he just goes all the time. He's a pleasure to watch. Fans love him. Maybe he doesn't have as high a fantasy ceiling, but his floor is pretty high if his ceiling is low. And then, of course, on the blue line, Nikita Zaitsev has come as advertised. He's got 3 hits, 4 blocks, playing a lot of minutes for the Leafs. Sometimes the commentators have been commenting on how he's one of their best defensemen already. He's played pro. We talked about him in a previous episode. He's played pro already in the KHL, so he's an established prospect, and he's making a nice transition to the NHL.
Yeah, he's leading the Leafs in power play ice time. I really thought that was going to go to Morgan Riley, but he's definitely stealing power play ice time from Riley. So, yeah, Zaitsev is definitely a surprise. I knew he was going to be good. I didn't think he was going to come out this hot. So
yeah, Elan on Keeping Carlson podcast. He'll be really pleased. He had me on as a guest the other week, and we talked about defensemen, and he was asking me about Zaitsev or Provorov or Werenski, and I told him in the first year, I think Werenski perhaps has the most fantasy upside, and he was really disappointed because he drafted Zaitsev, but things are looking good for you right out of the gate, Elon. Zaitsev is looking solid.
Yeah, on a side note, Peter Harling, you were asked to come on a bonus episode of Keeping Carlson's podcast. That's pretty neat. Did you have fun?
I loved it. Yeah, I'm a longtime listener to that show, and to participate on it was a real pleasure. And we're kind of a brother-sister show. They're sponsored by Dauber Hockey, and we're the Dauber Prospects podcast, so it seemed like a good fit. And I really enjoyed the show, and I hope to go back on in the future.
But not full-time, right? You're staying with DPR?
I'm married to this show, buddy.
Okay, phew. All right, let's get back into some prospects. Boston Bruins got a defenseman on the back end. Who is he?
They have two, actually. Yeah. Brandon Carlo is the sexier player. He's got an assist already. He's playing just over 20 minutes a night for the Bruins on the back end already. Only the one assist, but he's got four hits and four blocks to his credit. He's playing an important role, and as Zdeno Chara continues to decline, his opportunity will only continue to increase. And the other player on the Bruins' back end is this guy called Rob O'Gara. He doesn't have any points. He plays about 16 minutes a night, but he's got three hits and five blocks. And he's really big. He's a good defensive defenseman. So in keeper leagues where you've got roto points, you know, hits, blocks, penalty minutes, that kind of stuff, he's a player that will have some value, especially if it's a capped pool. So leagues like the Dauber Prospects pool, I just picked him up as a free agent because well, he's in for injuries right now. If he can stay in the lineup, he'll be a long-time contributor.
Okay, so another backhand guy. I know you really like this guy, and you've backed it up talking about it, and I'm pretty sure you might have picked him in the DPFHL, or you wanted to. Mike Matheson out of Florida. Did you get him?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, and he's making that decision look fantastic.
Yeah, that really didn't come as a surprise to me. Watching him at the World Championships at the end of last season, I knew that he was going to be a top four defenseman in Florida. He's playing almost 20 minutes a night. He's got his first NHL point, which I don't know if you saw the highlight of it. It was amazing. It was a long shift that he had in 3-on-3 overtime, carried the puck in, kind of lost it, and then I think they were playing New Jersey maybe. And I can't remember who the defenseman was, but he carried it away from the corner. He got it off Matheson, carried it away from the corner behind the net. And Matheson just tracked him down, pushed him over like he was a kid, and then took the puck and centered it for an easy tap in game winning goal. It was an excellent display of will and determination. And some of our previous guests have talked about the compete that you need to have to be successful in the NHL. No, there was a really good example of it there where he just didn't give up and he willed that goal to happen.
Okay,
I like Matheson.
So Matheson or Werenski?
I think long-term I like Werenski over Matheson. I mean, he's for fantasy hockey. I think he's a more skilled player and he'll be better at creating offense for Columbus, but Matheson is a really good all-around player. He'll play maybe top pairing with Aaron Ekblad going forward for Florida, and there's a lot to like about that scenario as well. So no bad choice out of the two.
Yeah, and I do think the Ekblad Yandel will take more minutes and will have more compete level than a lot of the Columbus Blue Jackets do for Werenski in the long term. So yeah, I think Werenski close, Mike Matheson right behind him. Chicago's got a ton of guys. Where you want to start?
They do. They have They have four rookies on their roster right now, and we've talked several times about two of them already, Nick Schmaltz and Tyler Mott. I'll just point out right off the bat that Nick Schmaltz has got he's got his first NHL goal. I believe it was a goal he scored. He's got 1 point. And Tyler Mott still hasn't scored, but he's got two assists, so more points. He's got four shots on goal, five hits, and five blocks in two games. I haven't had a chance to watch a Chicago game yet, but on my Twitter feed, anyone who's a Chicago fan or beat writer or writer, they're all saying some pretty favorable things about Mr. Mott. Ryan Hartman is another player on that team. He's got a goal and an assist and two shots on goal in only one or two games. I can't remember how many games he's played. Two games, 2 points. And, you know, so he's got a little bit of experience in the AHL as well under his belt now. He's a first round pick, so he's got some pedigree as well. So he's making an impression as rookie year. And another player is Vincent Hinostroza. Hasn't produced so much points so far as the other guys, but he's made the team to start the season. Whether or not he can stick remains to be seen, but I believe the other three players will play the majority, if not the entire season, in the NHL for Chicago.
Okay, so Dallas Stars have been hampered with injuries from their top six, top nine guys. And a guy that's filling in that is second in rookie goal scoring is Devin Shore. Have you got to watch this guy?
No, but I hear a lot of good things, and his stat line is really impressive. Two games, 3 points, plus three. He's a little bit weak on the faceoff, 37.9%. He's a center, but most rookies are, and coaches have a tendency to play them in sheltered situations where they're only taking draws in the offensive zone as opposed to the defensive zone. So that bodes well for his fantasy value as well, that he's getting offensive zone starts. Three shots on goal. He's a plus three. He had a really good season last year in the AHL. He was lighting it up, scoring, and he got a debut in the NHL, played a little bit last year, and had an injury that cost him to miss a lot of the season. But the Dauber Prospect Guide said he's got an opportunity. If he has a strong training camp, he could make the team right away out to start the season. And if he can find his offense in the NHL this time around, he could stick and play a prominent role. And so far, that is exactly what's happened with him in a small sample size to start the season.
Yeah, and he's
the other player. Oh, go ahead.
He is getting quite a bit of power play time on ice as well, so that's definitely benefiting that. And he's playing with Korpikoski and Brett Ritchie, so kind of odd that he's been able to put up numbers with those two guys. You wouldn't think that. You'd think if he was playing with like Jamie Benn, you'd be getting those numbers. So it's kind of interesting that he's still putting up numbers with two weaker line mates. Brett Ritchie's still pretty good though.
It bodes very well for his long-term value that he's not just riding the coattails of Sagan and Ben.
Yeah, and Patrick Sharp's been also on Ritchie and Shore's line, so maybe he's learned a lot from Patrick Sharp, so that might help too.
Yeah, the other guy in Dallas that I've been a fan of for a while and tried to get in a few keeper leagues is Steven Johns, the defenseman. He's a big defenseman. He's got two games so far this season, one goal, six hits, two blocks. He doesn't have the same kind of fantasy offensive upside as some of the other defensemen we've been talking about, like Matheson, Werenski, and Provorov, who are all doing very well. But again, in the leagues that reward the greasy stats, hits and blocks, etc., he's a player that should have a lot of value there. And Dallas just loves him. He was a must-add player to the trade in which they got Patrick Sharp from Chicago. He's a deal breaker. Johns had to be part of that deal, so that tells you how much they like him.
Yeah, is he better than Esa Lindell?
They're different players. Johns is a big two-way player. Esa Lindell is not very big, and he's a more modern version NHL defenseman. He's really good at transition. When he gets the puck back in the Dallas end, he'll be able to move it up the ice. He's a puck mover. Steven Johns is more of a people mover.
Oh, okay.
That's a generality in their styles, though, of course.
All right. Well, I think that recaps most of the rookies that are having a great first week. Obviously, we didn't talk about Austin Matthews, but he was named the second star of NHL.com. So good on you, Austin Matthews. Sorry, we're not going to talk about you because everybody else has. But in segment two, Peter, we're going to play a little game of stay or nay. Who stays from the three guys we pick and who goes from the three guys we picked? That'll be up next. In segment two, we're going to play a little game of stay or nay. I'm going to pick a player for Peter to let me know if he thinks he's going to stay for the season or if he's gone after the 9-game tryout or maybe after a month or two. So, Peter, let's start with Travis Konecny. What do you think of this kid?
I think he's had a really impressive start to the season. He's got 6 shots on goal. He had 2 points in 1 game, 4 hits. And with the suspension to Braden Schenn, it has really allowed him an opportunity to play some key minutes here early in the season. And he has not disappointed. One of the comments I had in my interview with Keeping Carlson the other week was we talked about Travis Konecny, and the key for him, in my opinion, is going to be if he can stay healthy, because he plays a very rambunctious style. He's had 2 significant shoulder injuries, which cost him to miss the last 2 OHL playoffs. So as far as I'm concerned with Konecny, it comes down to his health. If he can stay healthy and play like this the whole year, he ain't going nowhere. So I say stay.
Yeah,
what do you say?
I'm going to agree with you. And playing with Couturier and Voracek is definitely going to help him stay. If he was down on the third line, I would question it. And he's also getting around 14 and a half minutes of ice time per game. So that is all indications that he's probably going to stay. I don't see him going after the 9 games.
Yeah, it's still early, and as the season wears on, like even just a couple of weeks to a month, and things will tighten up pretty much across the NHL pretty tight, and some of the players that are looking really good right now might hit the wall, and then teams might think, yeah, World Juniors, you can go, and then finish the season in the CHL. But in this segment, it's all or nothing.
All right, so Travis Konecny staying. Next up, Jacob Chychrun from the Arizona Coyotes, defenseman that fell in the 2016 draft. Stay or nay, Peter?
This one is really hard. He's played very well. Team loves him. They think he's an NHL-ready defenseman. He can skate like an NHL defenseman. He's got NHL defenseman size. They're not going to worry about his offensive contributions. That's not necessary for him in his rookie year. They've got Ekman Larson there. Goligoski, those guys are going to be relied on to create the offense from the back end. So what I look at with Chychrun is, what is the opportunity? Who is his competition? So Oviel and Goligoski are the top pairing. And then I think Murphy and Schenn are pretty much locked in the middle two. So that leaves 2 positions left. And Chychrun is competing with Mike Stone, Kevin Connaughton, McBain, and Mahalik. Those guys are all on NHL one-way contracts, and there's an injury situation right now to Mike Stone and Connaughton, which makes it pretty easy to keep Chychrun in the rotation and just, you know, maybe sub one of those guys in and out of the roster every night. But if they have a healthy complement of defense, that's like 4 guys for 5 guys for 2 spots. He'd have to play really well to force them to put one of those players on waivers or just leave him in the press box. That being said, there's almost always an injury to every NHL team's blue line at any given time. So much to the dismay of the Sarnia Sting, I'm going to have to say stay again. I think Chychrun's here to stay.
Wow, that's definitely going to hurt the Sting in the long run. Did Zibnik Mikhailik get waived?
I checked on the hockey news today, and he is still listed on their depth chart, so I'm going to assume he's there. He's not listed as a minors player either, so...
Okay, I thought I saw him through the waivers. Maybe I was wrong, but...
Because you go through waivers doesn't mean you have to leave the team. You can still stay in the NHL.
Okay, so I'm going to agree. I think he's going to stay. I think it's going to be... interesting. It's definitely going to go game by game. It's not as definitive as Konecny was. And it's a really small sample size already, like just 1 game into the NHL. But his preseason was pretty good. So, yeah, I think he has the opportunity to stay. I don't know if they want him to be a bottom pairing defenseman, so that might mean he goes, but I think he plays his way on to staying the whole year.
Me too. I talked to Skit one time about basically that, and he said even if he's not playing in a top pairing role in his rookie season, playing in the NHL gives you access, you know, you're playing against better competition, and that only forces you to be better. Plus, as great as the coaching is in the CHL, you have to think that it's like the level of coaching is the same as the level of players. The higher up you go, the better the quality goes. So he should, in theory, be getting access to better coaching as well in the NHL. So even if he's playing in a bottom pairing, and even if he's substituted out of the roster occasionally, I still think he stays.
Interesting. All right, we both went to stay on Chychrun. All right, our next guy, Mitchell Marner. Finally scored his first goal. Finally, after two games. Took him long enough.
His mom missed it.
His mom missed it. Had to go to the bathroom. He did harp on his mom and said, you should have been there. But I guess he let her off because, yeah, it's his mother. So everybody lets off their mother. If they miss their first NHL goal, I would too. If I scored my first NHL goal and my mom missed it, it'd be okay. I'd be okay with it.
I'd never let her let it down.
Oh, man. Tough yeah. On your mom, Peter. That's interesting.
You can only score it once.
True. It was awesome to see his dad, how excited he was. But anyways, back to Mitchell Marner and his stat lines. And is he staying with the Leafs? Yay or nay? Stay or nay? What do you think, Peter?
Stay. I'm going 3 for 3 on the stay. Earlier in the podcast, one of our first episodes, we talked about Mitch and how he was disappointing in the rookie tournament. And all along, I've been thinking he'll make the team to start, play, you know, a cup of coffee, World Juniors, back to London, another Memorial Cup run. And while he hasn't, you know, he didn't score 4 goals in his first game, he hasn't, like, lit up the score sheet like Matthews has. He has looked just as dangerous. He just had the goals just haven't gone in for him. He's got 10 shots on goal, and he's even contributing in some other sets too. He's got 4 block shots. The concern everyone has with Mitch Marner is he's a little undersized, and what happens when someone staples him to the boards really good? That might never happen. He's so fast and so elusive, and his vision is so good. He's so aware of where everyone is all the time. And to catch him unprepared in a hit, I'm not sure anyone's going to be able to do it. It's kind of like Gretzky, like how Gretzky was, you know, he had some ankle and whatnot protecting him. And I'm not comparing Mitch Marner to Wayne Gretzky, people. Don't think I am. Just one small aspect of their game in their elusiveness. You know, you can't hit him if you can't catch him. And Mitch Marner is really slippery that way. So I think he's got the skill, the vision, the confidence, and the elusiveness to not only survive in the NHL as a 19-year-old, but thrive.
Really? All right. As of right now, I'm going to say he stays. If you would ask me this question the day before the season started, I would have said nay for sure. I thought they were going to send him back and just dominate in the O again and just get him a little bit, bulk him up a little bit. But now he's playing where Phil Kessel played for multiple years. He's playing with Van Riemsdyk and Tyler Bozak. He's going to produce with those two guys. Those two guys aren't the top dogs of the NHL, but they play well together, and they use a guy who can shoot a puck very well, just like Phil Kessel. Again, I'm not comparing Marner to Kessel, but I think he can fit in that role of coming off the wing, flying because he can skate, just like Phil Kessel can, and he's got a shot like Phil Kessel. So I definitely think he's going to stay if Babcock leaves him with Bozak and Van Riemsdyk.
And he's a far better playmaker than Phil Kessel is. Mitch Marner makes plays and passes and sets guys up for goals that just have that, like, wow factor. Like, how did he make that pass? How did he thread that needle? How did he know he was there? How did he fly it through the air and land, you know, flat on the ice, right on the tape for an easy tap-in goal for the recipient of the pass? I mean, we could be wrong. He could end up, you know, hitting the wall after a while and going back to junior. But if I were in a situation where I own Mitch Marner in a fantasy league and you had a prospect bench And when once you recall a player from your prospect bench, a lot of leagues are like this, and you can't send him back. I wouldn't worry about risking calling Marner up for, 10 games and then having to, sit him on my bench as an inactive player or on my roster as a player that contributes nothing all year while he plays out the remainder of the season in junior. I'm confident that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I would take that risk too. All right, that's it for stay or nay. We went all stays. Hopefully
I'll
we're
stay.
correct, Peter.
Well, I hope so. That's a lot of love we just gave out, so these kids got to make us look smart.
Yeah, so Konechny, Chychrun, Marner, if you're listening, please keep playing as hard as you're playing. You're doing well.
Yeah.
They're
Yeah,
probably not.
I wish I owned them in my fantasy leagues.
And they're probably not listening, Peter. I'm sorry.
Probably not.
But if they are, or if their moms are, we are on your kid's side. And
Yes,
that's it.
hopefully Mitch's mom didn't miss his first appearance on our show.
Yeah. Well, maybe second or third. I think we've talked about him quite a bit.
A
Marner's
bit.
getting a lot of airtime on this DPR show.
He's worth it.
All right. You heard it here first. He's worth it. That's it for stay or nay. Next up, we're going to be talking to Shane Malloy, the author of The Art of Scouting, when we come back.
You're listening to Dobber Prospects Radio. I'm Peter Harling, and with me is Paul Zwanbag, and our guest on this segment is Shane Malloy. Shane is the author of The Art of Scouting. Shane is also the co-host of Hockey Prospect Radio on SiriusXM and now across the TSN radio network, and he does some scouting in the USHL. So, Shane, thank you very much for joining us on the show tonight.
Anytime, gentlemen. It's my pleasure.
All right. So Shane, what I want to talk to you about first is scouting and how to be a better scout. A lot of our listeners are fantasy hockey enthusiasts, and if they're into prospects, they're probably amateur scouts as well. So what are some important skills that they can look for in players that they think will make it to the NHL? What do you look for?
Well, before you even get to that point of actually evaluating skill sets and attributes, I think the most important thing for someone when you're watching, you honestly want to try to evaluate a player is you have to look internally first. These are lessons that I learned the hard way after a lot of mistakes and skeletons in my closet, is that understanding your own personal biases and be honest with yourself and write them down. Because when you go into a hockey rink and you specifically are going to watch players, your biases can really hinder the true nature of that player and what's actually going on. Because when you have a bias, the human eyes and you as a person are going to try to find ways to justify your bias. And that can hurt you the most more than anything. When I go into a rink now, I don't expect something to happen. I don't even want something to happen. I just watch and see what does happen, and then I write it down. So it doesn't matter if I've seen that player 6 times, 12 times before. It doesn't matter what he has done before, because I don't begin to actually make a judgment on a player until the end of the year. For the entire year, I just collect data. We're like all scouts really are just information gatherers, and they gather as much information as they can on a player, whether it's on ice or off ice. And then at the end of the year, that's when you start making judgments. Now you can make partial judgments just after Christmas because you want to start focusing on players who have a higher skill set or players that you particularly like for obvious reasons. But to be honest, the first thing I would do is look at your own personal biases and try to control those. And don't go in with expectations. Like, doesn't matter what people have said about that player. Like, take it out of your mind. Ignore it, because it'll influence your decisions. And just because somebody's worked in the industry for a long time doesn't necessarily mean they're actually good at what they do. So I think it's important for people to start with a clean slate. And that's the best thing I can say to you, or any of the listeners in the beginning, is start with that first, and then looking at their skating and hockey sense and skills and all the other things, that comes second. But you got to control you as a person first, and don't listen to all the noise. Just take your own judgment, and good, bad, or otherwise, you got to stand by what you think about a player. And that's where you start to really learn about evaluating players and understanding who you are as an evaluator. I wish I would have learned that earlier, to be honest. I would have saved myself a lot of grief, but I think that's the best thing you can do before you start evaluating. But we can talk about other skill sets too as well.
Sure, that's a very interesting point. I mean, so some biases would be like things that you've read, or you like players that have big size or can skate, that kind of stuff.
Well, certainly also like, you know, say if they're, you know, there's also all kinds of different types of biases where, you know, there's a player, you know, you heard things about a player, or that, you know, he skates exceptionally fast and he motors around the ice. But there's a difference between action and production, and trying to separate the two. So maybe you go into a game and you like guys who can skate really fast. So you're giving a guy a higher grade overall that he can skate really fast, but he's not productive as a player. Where the guy who's not as fast as him is far more productive all over the ice in terms of with and without the puck. So sometimes those things can blind you. Or you get sucked in by the sexy skills. Guys who can dangle and do toe drags and do all these other really fancy things at a junior rink. But does it translate into the NHL game? Like, there's things that I call NHL transferable plays. And can you make that play at the NHL level, say, as a forward versus an NHL defenseman? If the answer is no, like, there's no chance of, like, an NHL defenseman, like, falling for those things, then what that play doesn't matter. Even if they score a goal or make some beautiful play, you know that's not going to happen at the NHL level, and they're going to have to change their game, so, or change some of the things they do about their game. So those are some of the little things that I eventually picked up by mentors and people who have showed me how to scout and how to evaluate.
That's a very interesting point. My next question was actually, what are some differences to keep in mind for amateur versus pro hockey in scouting? So you were just saying you can see a nifty dangle that works at the CHL level that you don't think will work at the AHL level, or you know won't work at the NHL level. What are some things you can, some other things that are maybe less obvious, or how can you make that determination that that move just won't fly?
Well, I think if you watch the game enough, I think one of the advantages, especially if you live in a city where you can see junior A hockey, major junior, American League, and the NHL in a given week or even a given month, you begin to start to see the level of skill set and what plays work at a junior A level all the way up to an NHL level. And I had that advantage when I was living in Vancouver for a long time, because we had all four levels in one area, and within a given week I could see all four. And you start to see just the simple plays at a pro level. Although you know, you sort of like dismiss it, but even something as just a give and go, which isn't used as frequent in junior, is something that is a staple and a bread and butter at the NHL level. You have to use it to create time and space and separation. So that's just one example of something in the pro, or even something as simple as chipping a puck off the boards around a defender and skating past him, and then skating past him and have that puck come back to you. Those simple things that maybe in an NHL game you'll watch and like you don't even think about it, you just watch it happen because you've seen it so many times. But you go back in junior and it isn't used because they can get around guys, you can dangle, you have more time and space. And that's the biggest thing for me, is understanding time and space and how much time a junior player has compared to a pro player in the NHL. In junior, you may have 2 seconds, maybe even 3 seconds to make a play. But in many cases, it's two. When you get to the American League, it might be one. In the NHL, it might be half a second. and your space and time is gone. So that's sort of, you know, the things to look for is the players at the junior level that can create time and space can generally usually translate most of that into the pro game. And also, you know, on the defensive side is taking away time and space.
So Shane, okay. The United States Hockey League is a rapidly developing league. More players are being drafted from the USHL every year. Will more prominent players be willing to play there and stay through until they are 20?
You know, that's an interesting question. And it's, you know, the league is really interested in is making sure that every player that goes to the USHL goes to college, whether it's a Div 1 school or below. The importance of it is to go into school and getting a scholarship. So if they happen to want to play till they're 20, they're more than welcome to do that. But, you know, the emphasis is to make sure that player has a scholarship and goes to school and gets an education and can play hockey at the same time. So they're more willing to do that. I see now in the last, I think, 5 years, particularly in the last two or three, where the interest in the USHL has gone up because there's been more exposure and better marketing, more than anything. As well as, obviously, it certainly doesn't hurt that they have, you know, more players drafted than any other league in the last couple of years, and that there's been prominent first-round picks coming out of the USHL. That's obviously helped as well. I have no, you know, preference over what league a player plays in. If they want to play a major junior, great. If you want to play in the USHL, that's great too. If you want to play junior in Canada, fantastic. You want to go in Europe, that's great too. For me, it's about what's best for the player and what's best for the player's family. And I think each league has some great different areas of development for players on and off the ice. So I don't have a preference that way. Just from the USHL standpoint, you know, to your question, I've seen it, but most players move on by the time they're 19 to go into college.
Okay, so would you say there is an advantage for the USHL over the CHL? Or are they kind of equal?
Well, I mean, the only I think the only advantage would be for the USHL is those players are going to go off and play in college, and you're not forced to make a decision to turn pro at 20, where you can go back to, you know, go to playing college hockey in the States, and say you play till you're 19 in the USHL, you could end up playing 4 years of college, and all of a sudden you come out and you're 22 or 23 years of age, and now you're a man. You know, that extra 3 years of development could make a huge difference, or 4 years of development, depending on how long you play, could make all the difference in the world whether you turn into a pro player at the American League or the NHL level. Now, I'm not saying that you still can't do that in the CHL, but you're making that jump into the pro ranks at an earlier age, and that's more difficult. It's a matter of your body being ready to do that and being more emotionally and mentally mature enough to handle those rigors on a daily basis. So, and that's just human development, and that's where I think that model has an advantage over the CHL. But that's not to say that you can't go play in the CIS up in Canada and then go on to play in the American League after that and work your way into the NHL, because that's starting to become an option as well.
Okay, so the 2017 NHL draft, are there any early impressions from any players on you so far?
From the USHL specifically or just in general?
Just in general, just the 2017 draft picks.
Well, I'm intrigued by Evie Tolvanen, who plays for Sioux City United States Hockey. They got a chance to see him play at international tournaments, and he's a guy, although undersized, which doesn't matter to me. He's at 5'10", about 175 pounds. This is a kid who's intriguing because of his hockey sense and his ability to create space with his skating and just make plays at a high pace. He's an intriguing player, as well as Cal Foote, a defenseman out of Kelowna. I had a chance to watch him play last year, and I might get out to the West again and see him play. You know, I don't know what they're feeding this kid. Obviously, his dad's a big man too, and so, you know, so is his brothers, but he's 6'4", 210 pounds, and there's a package potentially of a guy who can be a two-way D-man but have the physicality there as well. So those are two guys that have really sort of jumped out at me in terms of the pretty intriguing packages overall.
Okay, so most of our listeners are sitting here listening, trying to find out some early 2017 fantasy relevant players in the draft. Is Calfoot fantasy relevant, would you say, or are there any guys that would jump up the board in fantasy?
It depends on the league, obviously, you're in. I'm in a keeper league, it's a GM simulator league, and we use the same rules as the NHL. So we draft our players, but we draft blind. So we draft before the NHL drafts. We don't know where the players are going to. So from a keeper league standpoint, that's what's interesting about players. It really depends on your scoring system. We have a roto based system, which makes it more, I guess, legitimate, but it makes it more realistic, I suppose, than doing other different types of sims. So for me, depending on your league, I always go with the guys who are safe picks in the draft. I just want guys who can play in the NHL, because if you look at the numbers in the NHL, 70% of the players in the first round will play more than 200 games, where 30% of them are not. So you have to sort of balance that. And I know some people like to swing for the fences, but for me, I go for the safe player in the draft in my fantasy league, because I want the assets as a general manager. So it honestly depends on your scoring system. I know it's a tough question to answer, unless you get really specific.
All right, do you got any of those, any safe player names? Just off the cuff?
Oh, safe player. Off the cuff, I would say Nick Hegg, defenseman out of Mississauga, safe. Cal Foote as a defenseman, he'll be safe. Clem Costin, if you can get him early, I think him along with Casey Mittelstad, those are pretty safe picks. Nolan Patrick and obviously Gabe Vilardi are pretty much no-brainers.
Yeah.
For that. But as Michael Rasmussen, a kid who plays for Tri-City in the WHL, he might be a guy that's a pretty safe pick as well, or UC Valimaki, a D-man out of Tri-City as well. Those could be like pretty safe picks. They may not be, the top end, some of these guys might not be top end players, but I think they're more likely to play in the NHL. And for me, that matters.
All right, Shane, that's awesome. Let's talk about your book, The Art of Scouting. This book really resonated with me, and it's required reading for anyone who wants to learn more about scouting. In the first part of the book, you talk about life at the rink. Is scouting a glorious job? What's it like?
Would I say it's glorious? I guess if you love the game, and I mean, if you really love it, it doesn't you're not there for the paycheck, because you can make money, better money in other places. Like, by far, you can make way more money in other places. But you really have to love the game if you're going to travel and be away from your family. Like, it's called the No Home League, man, the NHL, for a scout. You're not home. I'd say 10 days out of a month, maybe even 15, you're not at home. You're in a hotel, and you're driving around. And it sounds cool if you're working for an NHL team, but there's some great benefits to it. But getting those jobs are really, really tough, and you generally have to be a scout and junior first to cut your teeth, and you get paid very little money for that. And then even then, you're away from your family, so you better love the game, because glorious is not the word I would use. I think to do this job, you got to be crazy about hockey, and you got to be a little bit crazy too, to be honest. But you got to love it. You got to love the game. I mean, and it has to exude. Like, when you come, you want to be at the rink. Like, when end of August hits, you got to be pacing around, because the season can't come fast enough.
I hear that. In part three of the book, you discuss different skills and how to assess or what to look for. How does this vary with live scouting versus video scouting or watching on TV?
Well, my preference is, of course, always being live, because you see nuances in the game. The problem with being on TV, even if you're doing some isolation tapes, is that you miss a large portion of the rink, unfortunately. I like to know where the back-checking forward is breaking to. It's important. Like, there's a whole bunch of nuances in the game that you don't see because you're, you know, the camera pans and you miss it. So, you know, obviously video is better than nothing, but it's just a tool that you use to help supplement when you can't do a live viewing. But when in doubt, be at the corner of the rink and have a live view. There's so many different types of things, of body language that you don't see on TV, or, you know, you may not see communication between the player and his teammates or the referee or the coaches, or, you know, there's a whole bunch of little things like that. It's harder to see, you know, hand placement on sticks or where they load their passes from when you're watching on video, unless it's an isolation tape. So it's a tool. I use video along with other things, but when in doubt, beat the rink, because I think seeing play development really truly matters. And it's not, play development isn't always the person with the puck. In many cases, it's the other guys around you that can make a play develop based on what they're doing and how they're reacting to the person with the puck.
So you're scouting, and you also play a key role for EA Sports in assigning player values and scores. How do you make those decisions?
Well, without getting into detail that I'm not allowed to discuss, I scout those players no different than I would any other player. So I do live viewings, and then I do isolation tapes, and I watch games on video, and I provide analytics, and I base some decisions on that as well. And I compile all that data, and we have a list of attributes that I have to grade them on, and then I grade them on those specifically. And then I watched them over a long periods of time, because with any player, because I start scouting them in the game at 16 until they crest and then they fall, whether they play in the NHL and retire. So it could end up being a 12-year process where I see a player at 16 and I've scouted them and now they're 28. But I specifically, we have 30 different attributes that we have to grade. Not all of them are skills. Some of them are playing biases. Some of them are things like endurance and your durability and things like that, just to make it more realistic from that standpoint. And I just give a numerical value based on that. And it's just numerical based on efficiency. So it would be similar to a grade you would get in university. So if I'm giving you an 82 efficiency, then that's like getting, an A- in an undergrad. So the players that play in the NHL are generally skill set of probably 80 or better. If you're going to play in the NHL, you're one of the elite players in the world. So there is, an expectation that your skill set should be in there. But if it's below that, then I'll justify why I don't have it there. And then the other leagues sort of drop below that as well.
Do you ever really have any players give you a hard time about their rank, their overall rank, or is that not really?
Well, here's the interesting. I've had one player, and I'll tell you the story before we get into the overall. Sam Gagner was on TSN with Ryan Rashad one day, and Zach Storchini was with him, and Zach has come in and done some fighting models with us for our game, and he's a super great guy. So Ryan had asked Sam, he said, "Hey, I saw that your overall moved up this year." And Sam had said, "You know, I talked to the guy who does the rankings, and he said the overall doesn't really matter. It's your individual attributes." And yeah, he didn't have a very good, he didn't have a rating as well as high as he wanted to. And then, I saw it on TV and I sort of laughed, and I bumped into his dad, Dave, who had worked for the Canucks at the time. And I said, "You know, Dave, tell Sam I want to drop his toughness down to 60 and Michael Nylander is going to beat the crap out of him every game." And Dave laughed his ass off. Obviously he told Sam. And then 2 days later, Sam Gagner gets in a fight with Craig Conroy. So I'm like, I knew he did it on purpose. Like, I was just sort of laughing. But that was the only time. Other than that, every once in a while, the tough guys will ask me, "Hey, can you bump my skating up a little bit? Because my kid likes to play me." I'm like, "Yeah, sure. No big deal." And other than that, nobody complains. Honestly, I haven't heard like now it could be behind the scenes, but we would generally hear it because from my understanding, the NBA guys complain a lot and the NFL guys will complain. But the NHL guys, they never complain. They're generally pretty happy just to be in the game. Like I even talked to Sid last year and he asked him, oh, hey, would you give me in the game? And I told him what it was. He's like, and he wasn't playing very well. And he said, oh, are you going to drop me down? I'm like, no. I'm like, I'll justify what I gave to you, and I'm sure you'll work it out. And he started laughing. I'm like, I hope so. And then, you know, 6 months later, they won the cup. So, you know, I'll justify in giving him the best ratings in the game because I think he's the best player in the game. So, but when it comes to the overall, this is an interesting thing. For all the listeners out there who don't know, the overall doesn't matter in the game. It actually has no application in the game. It's just a fluff number. And all it is if you open up the game and you're playing it and you click on a player and you look at the attributes, look at the player's style. So say he's a playmaker and there'll be certain attributes that bump up the overall for that player. And that's just based on the playing style. So the overall actually really doesn't matter. It's not that it really doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It has no application in the game. It doesn't make your player better. It doesn't make your player worse. So for all you listeners out there who play the game, don't worry about the overall. It doesn't matter.
But I'm sure it matters. To the players, though. Yeah.
No, it doesn't, actually, because I tell them, I go, by the way, it doesn't matter. And they're like, what? I'm like, no, it doesn't matter. Like, it has no application in the game. It doesn't make you better or worse. It doesn't make a difference. It's actually a zero indication of how good that player actually is, because you have to. Everybody thinks that every player is equal. Unfortunately, everybody plays a different style. So if you're a playmaker versus a grinder, but the grinder is like the best grinder in the entire league, and as a grinder, you're an 84 or an 85. But you're an 85 grinder. You're the best grinder in the league. And then you have another guy who is a good player. Say he's a second-line player, a second-line two-way winger, and he's also an 85. That doesn't mean the players are equal. It only means that as that playing style, he may be one of the best at what he does based on his playing style. Does that – I'm like, I don't know if that explained it, but we laugh about it. This has like been 12 years running where we keep telling people overall doesn't matter, and they just sort of forget about it because we've all been weaned on it for like decades that the overall is always there, and our assumption was that it actually did something and it mattered, and it didn't, and it doesn't, and it won't in the future. We even talked about getting rid of the overall, and we just couldn't find a way to get rid of it because everybody's had it for so long. I think there would just be a revolt. So we just leave it there. But it doesn't matter.
All right. Well, we're running out of time, Shane, but I want my listeners to know how they can get a copy of The Art of Scouting, the book that you wrote. I said it before, I'll say it again. It's must read material for anyone who has interest in scouting. So how can someone find a copy?
You can get the copy on best way to get it is amazon.com or amazon.ca and get to download the digital version. I know I won't make as much money on it, but that's okay. Actually, that's the easiest way to get it, and that's what I recommend. And honestly, I'm lucky when it comes to that book. I had over 55 scouts and NHL personnel all contribute to it. It's really, I was just a voice for them. And the book is really about them and what they do and their life. And I was just a conduit for that. So I've been very fortunate and blessed that they've taken care of me and mentored me over all these years. So if people are interested, please pick it up and then send me a tweet. I like to always like the feedback.
Yeah, it's a great book. It's got lots of scouting anecdotes, tales from the road. And if you're looking for help on how to assess players, it helps you with everything from hockey sense to skating to physical play to goaltenders, which are voodoo to me, defensemen and forwards, the attributes that you want to look for and what's important when scouting. So absolutely give it a give it a read, and they can listen to you every weekend on 9 o'clock on Sirius XM Satellite Radio doing the Hockey Prospects show with one of our former guests, Shane Malloy, and now on the TSN radio network across Canada as well. So congratulations again on being picked up by TSN, Shane, and looking forward to listening to the show. And we can follow you on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle again?
At Shane Malloy. Nice and easy.
Nice and easy. All right. Thanks so much for your time, Shane. It's been a pleasure having you on our show.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. The pleasure is all mine.
Talk to you later, Shane. Well, that's it for Dobber Prospects Radio this week. Thank you to Shane Malloy for chatting with us today. He gave quite a few young kids to put on your 2017 draft fantasy radar. I've just started my early draft list with those names. You can find Shane on Twitter at Shane Malloy, and also in our show notes you will find a link to his book, The Art of Scouting, as well as links to all the players we talked about in this episode. Our show notes can be found at dobberprospects.com. We also want to thank you, the listener, for tuning in as well. Without you guys, we wouldn't be able to produce a podcast, so please continue to listen. We want to do a mailbag segment once we get a bunch of questions, so email us at prospectradio@dobberprospects.com. We're going to try to get that out soon, but we need your questions, so please email us. And you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Don't forget to give us a 5-star review and share a podcast with anybody who may be interested. It helps greatly. You can find our show Twitter at @DPR_show, as well as myself, Paul Zwambag, at Zwambag, Zwambag, and Peter Harling can be found at P Harling. That's it for now. Talk to you soon, Peter. Goodbye.
Cheers.